and I'm an economist, I cannot believe that if a public plan really didn't play well by the American people, that you wouldn't have immediately a private insurance industry growing out of the ground, offering them a better deal. Isn't that how markets work?
I'm Dan Diamond. This is Pulse Check, and that was Uwe Reinhardt testifying before Congress in 2009 as Democrats debated the idea of a public health insurance option. That debate continues to be with us as Democrats hold hearings and push single-payer ideas. Uwe, however, is not. He passed away in November 2017, and some listeners may recall the episode where we briefly reflected on his legacy as arguably the most prominent and also pithiest health policy experts, for decades a go-to for lawmakers crafting reforms or journalists on Deadline. And Uwe's words are still with us in the form of a new book, Priced Out, which deals with many of the themes he researched over his career and tries to explain why American healthcare is so screwed up. His wife, Zhongmei Cheng, who's better known as May, also a healthcare researcher who is Uwe's longtime collaborator, joined me on the podcast today. May told me that Uwe wrote Priced Out in 2017 because he was worried about the fate of the Affordable Care Act, an ugly patch on an ugly healthcare system, he believed, but that Republicans' fight to repeal Obamacare, which Uwe called more entertaining than reading Lady Chatterley's Lover, and I'm quoting May here, but that fight was putting millions of Americans at risk. You can find references to Uwe's work in the show notes, and here's my conversation with May Cheng. Zhongmei Cheng, welcome to Politico Pulse Check.
I'm very pleased to be here with you today.
May, I have in my hand a book by Uwe Reinhardt,
yes,
your husband, your collaborator, a book that comes out as we are recording. This is the day of release, May 14th. This is Uwe's last book. Uwe passed away a year and a half ago. Can you talk me through the process of how this book came to be?
The process. Well, I should start by saying that Uwe had always hoped to write a book like this for the American public and for our health, our policymakers, that he wanted to explain our extraordinarily complex healthcare system and our very confusing national health policy to the public and to policymakers, because there's so much misinformation, ignorance, and just myth, untruth said about our healthcare system. And Uwe, being a teacher at heart, he said he thought that he wanted to bring the facts, to tell the truth about our healthcare system.
Are there more misinformations, more myths today than there were even 5-10 years ago, or has this been a problem throughout healthcare reform in America?
It's the latter. Yes. Yes. People say things that are just patently untrue, and I think because they're just misinformed. And part of it may have been driven by underlying ideology.
This book, Priced Out, plays on a reference to Uwe's famous paper years ago, the quote, "It's the prices, stupid," paper, I think in the foreword written by Paul Krugman, mm-hmm, economist at Princeton, longtime mm-hmm friend of your family. Paul Krugman references this paper, this idea that the U.S. healthcare system is so messed up, mm-hmm, because our prices are so much higher, artificially so, than in the rest of the world, that you can explain so much that is wrong here by that simple fact. Is that, in your mind, May, is that the through line of this new book?
Well, I think the book is a lot more than that, because Uwe really walks you, the readers, through the different aspects of healthcare in this country, the different parts, things such as who pays for healthcare? Why is healthcare so expensive in our country? Why do we have not a universal insurance coverage for everyone? And how do we compare to other countries?
Not well. Spoiler alert. Not well. do we compare?
In many respects, yeah. In some respects, we do pretty well. Like we have, you take cancer mortality, but that's an arguable point. But in some cancers, we have longer 5-year survival, but that may be because we find them earlier. But on all other population health metrics, we don't do as well. I mean, we are Americans live shorter lives, and many more die from causes that can be avoided if people had timely health care or access to health care.
This book, it's a slender book. I want to say it's about 170 pages or so, mm-hmm. but it does have sections that take the reader through the history of healthcare reform efforts, but also things that are ever present. I remember there's a section on surprise medical billing, mm-hmm. which is in the news right now because President Donald Trump and members of Congress are pushing surprise medical bill reforms. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there's a lot that is very of the moment, as well as the path to this moment. Are there lessons that jump out to you, May, for policymakers who are thinking about doing healthcare fixes, pushing legislation?
You know, I would say that for every problem with our healthcare in America, there are solutions. But where you tumble is over political differences.
And in the book, any lessons, any takeaways that you think, if someone was reading this on Capitol Hill, that there could be a guide, a helpful path to pushing health reform that Uwe might have seen as viable?
Well, the book points out the facts, and then so that people, first of all, get a full picture of the problems we face. And then I think Uwe will say that you can then go about finding solutions for each and every one of them. If you're thinking about doing everything all at the same time, that's politically not feasible. But there are solutions that can happen, but that depends on leadership and the political will. And I guess the public can play a role too. You know, if you read a book like this, I'm sure the public will have ideas and they can get to their legislators. They can have, you know, meetings amongst themselves and discuss and then make policy inputs to our policymakers. I think there's a lot that can be done. But first of all, people need to know the truth. They need the facts. You know, the Chinese say that, you know, you have to not just know yourself, but you have to know your enemy. And then you can plan your strategy. And then of 100 battles, you'll win 100. That's Sun Tzu. What is it?
The famous war.
Book about what to do, how to win wars.
Surprisingly applicable to pushing health reform, too. I thought that in the book it was clever. There are a mix of graphs. There are comic book strips. There are jokey commercial ads that have been screenshot. Who picked all of those? Was that you? Was that Uwe? Was that the research help?
Oh, no. This is everything in the book is Uwe's original, that I wanted to respect every word that he put down on paper for this book and not change it. Unless, say, necessary things such as he might say, because he wrote this book in the summer and fall of 2017 when Congress was having these heated debates about the proposals to replace and repeal Obamacare, that he'll say the debate going on in Congress now. Now, I may replace the word now with in 2017. That's all.
And in some of those cases, the debates that we were having as a nation just a year and a half ago have continued in alternate forms. The Trump administration is still looking for ways to repeal the Affordable Care Act, maybe not through Congress, but by calling on the courts to strike the law down or finding ways to take pieces of the law apart. I have more questions about Uwe and his work and his thoughts on this moment, but I thought it might be helpful to give listeners more of a sense of who Uwe was, what his impact and legacy was. And just to provide some context, I mentioned right before we sat down to do this interview, I was talking to the office of a prominent senator on the Hill, Republican senator, and I mentioned that I was talking to you for a podcast interview in a few minutes. And this person's office, they knew Uwe well, a Republican, prominent Republican senator, maybe not someone that an average listener would say would naturally correspond with a Princeton economics professor, but that was the kind of impact that I saw Uwe having as a rare person who could bring facts, who could cut through the partisan dialogue in Washington, D.C. over healthcare. How did he get that way?
How did he get that way? I think it has to do with his personal values and his experiences, life experiences, especially those in childhood. He grew up during World War II and in the years after World War II in Germany when they were poor. He and his family went hungry very often. And I remember he did his math homework in the dirt, in the sand, because there was no money for paper or pencil. Okay? But the one thing he and his family have was health care, without which he and his family and his brothers and sisters may not survive childhood, because they all come down with these childhood infectious diseases, and he could have died. And then they were, you know, children hurt themselves, especially boys. That is why we have a higher mortality among male children than female children. But then they would do things like they would pick up live bullets in the open fields and play with them. They say they like to see it explode, right? So they could have been blown up by things like that. But the one thing that they did have was healthcare, as every other German. So he always said that, you know, yeah, we grew up poor. You know, it was hard growing up. No hot water, no heat, just nothing. That he grew up in a tool shed, walked a mile to school every day and back, and I said, often hungry. But that never left him. He remembered that healthcare they had, and that saw his family through. You know, if I may, Dan, I found the other day a very lovely quote that Uwe said on Fresh Air, which was, you know, my family and I, yes, we were poor, but we had healthcare.
In some way, I personally don't share the agony of the American people. On the other hand, I grew up in a tool shed, and I know how good it was that when we were paupers, my family, we had health insurance like everyone else in Germany. I've never forgotten that, and I would like the American people to have what I had and my mother had as a kid.
So his whole life, he was driven by this sense of justice, of what is right, what is just, what is honorable. And I would say that is his personal ethics that drove his work and his thinking and any policy advice that he would give to anyone who would listen.
How does a poor German boy become arguably the most prominent health care professor, teacher in the United States? What was the path?
Okay. So it's a very interesting one. But lots of people have interesting paths, you know, from childhood, youth, to who they became. For Uwe, when he became of draft age, he said to himself, I quote him, because he said that many, many times, I refuse to salute German generals. He was so angry at what the Germans, the Nazis, did in World War II. So he just picked up by himself. His family stayed behind. He left Germany. He went to Canada with $90 in his pocket and no family, no friends, nothing. And He had only 10 years of education. The family didn't have money to send him to the real high school, the gymnasium. So he went to the school that apprentices went to, the Realschule. And then so he landed a job at a shipping company. And so he was just doing clerical work for 3 years in Montreal. And then to supplement his very meager income, he worked as a parking lot attendant at night. And it was hard. And he counted on the tips he would be given by people whose car he parked. When he brings the car to them, they give him a tip. So then once he saved up enough money, he ate just oats and oranges. That's basically his diet because they were cheap. Then he found the cheapest Canadian university and went there, which was the University of Saskatchewan. And 4 years later, he graduated winner of the Canadian Governor General's gold medal. So
pretty impressive for a former parking lot attendant.
Right, right, yeah. Because then he just aced everything, driven by this desire to not get kicked out and to succeed. So after graduation, he wanted to go work for industry company, thinking that he'll never be poor again this way, and he could support a family and all that. But his professor had something else for him in mind. You know, he says, no, it's wasteful. You should go to graduate school. And so Uwe ended up at Yale. And that's where he did his graduate studies in economics. And there, I think he, of course, studied under many, many good, very famous, prominent economist professors. But one, I believe, particularly had a great influence on him, and that person was Professor Jim Tobin. Tobin was a Nobel laureate in economics and an economic advisor to President Kennedy. I think the message Uwe got from Tobin is this, that economics is a tool to do good for society. And so you should always pair rigorous economic analysis with the thought that, is this good for society? How does it impact society, impact families? And so, I mean, that plus the way that Uwe felt, he was, as I mentioned, he was a very honorable, with a very strong sense of right and wrong, just and unjust, ethical, unethical. I think that's what made him who he became.
So a poor German boy goes to Canada, becomes a top student there, finds his way to the Yale economics program, and ends up advising U.S. policy leaders as well as leaders abroad. I thought an interesting part of this book, and you and I have talked about this a bit before, was Uwe's advice, along with you, to Taiwan. As Taiwan 30 years ago was thinking about how it would reform its health system. What did that advice to Taiwan look like, and how did that advice come to pass?
Okay, so let's go to 1989. That's a critical year, because that was the year that Uwe, as a government advisor, made the recommendation to Taiwan's government to go a single-payer route to achieve universal health coverage based on three considerations. Number one, a single payer is equitable because everyone is treated the same. So healthcare, you will get healthcare based on your healthcare needs and not on your ability to pay. So poor and rich, that didn't matter. You get the same care and everyone gets it. Okay, so equity, that's one. And two is that single payer is a wonderful tool to control cost. I'm not sure we have time to go into that today, perhaps another day, but it can control cost, and Taiwan today controls costs beautifully. They're spending 6% of GDP, one-third of what the United States spends, and they cover the whole population, 99.9999% of the population, with a very, very generous benefit package, inpatient, outpatient, dental, drugs, prescription drugs, etc. And the third thing is that a single-payer system is administratively very easy to administer, very simple. So you spend very little money and you get so much done. Give you an example. In Taiwan's case, the population is 23.4 million people, and the government has fewer than 3,000 people that runs that whole system at a cost of under 1% of the budget.
And Uwe had a great line. He had versions of this over time, but the idea that health reform is essentially taking dollars out of somebody's pocket, often somebody who doesn't want you to take those dollars away. Less bureaucracy, maybe that's good for the average citizen, not good for the bureaucratic industry that has built up around healthcare. And that's one reason why single payer, regardless of the feasibility overall, one reason why single payer in America has proven so difficult. There are lots of entrenched interests that fight back when there are pushes to reduce the bureaucracy. One interesting point about that Taiwan advising role that Uwe had and that you had as well, Taiwan would come back to you and ask for advice. And sitting around your kitchen table, you could offer advice that would reshape this country's health system from around the world. Is that correct? Is that an accurate way of telling it?
That is correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, we won't go into details, but that is correct. And so Uwe actually has said to me many times that he considers his lifelong work's most rewarding experience is working with the Taiwan government, because the government did something that benefited everyone in Taiwan. There's so much good was accomplished because the government went that route, single payer. Because you see, every healthcare dollar not spent can be spent on something else. Education, infrastructure, national defense, research and development, you name it, the environment, right? Yeah.
Since we're talking about Taiwan's single payer system, perhaps it's a good opportunity to discuss what is in front of America's politicians right now. Many Democratic candidates are pushing various Medicare for All packages or coverage expansion that could lead to single payer at some point in the future. And I have found, May, I've reflected multiple times, as a reporter, I wish I could just reach out to Uwe for a quote on this latest reform package that maybe Senator Bernie Sanders is proposing, where Democrats are holding a hearing on Medicare for All. It's a historic hearing. Man, I would love to hear what Uwe would have to say. And in this book, in Priced Out, there is a collection of Uwe's thoughts on single payer, on the ideas that underpin Medicare for All. Is it safe to say that he liked single payer? He was a believer in it himself, mm-hmm. but he was worried that the United States would screw it up.
Yes, and that, he would say, that is because of our system of governance. We are a presidential system, not a parliamentary system. So a president cannot say we should do Medicare for All like Canada did. It would have to go through Congress. So, but the Congress is split, right? So it's very, very difficult to do. Plus, our political system also allows, say, campaign finance contributions. So the special interest groups have, through contributions, exert a great deal of influence on individual legislators. And so it's like, you know, you don't have a consistent, you don't have a single entity that can decide on policy for the whole country. And so that we cannot really expect to run it responsibly, because the special interest will probably end up writing how much we should pay the providers. Not like in other single-payer systems where the government set fees, albeit with provider input.
You've mentioned that the work in Taiwan was among Uwe's career achievements that he was most proud of. Was there an opportunity that Uwe felt like he missed to influence healthcare reform in America, or a project that maybe he was involved with that, in retrospect, wished had gone differently?
That's a difficult question to answer. I would say this. Uwe has made it very clear, and it's in the book, that in America, our economic and political cultures in this environment, that the supply side of healthcare, supply side being the hospitals and doctors, the ones who deliver services, are stronger than the demand side, the patient side. Okay, so you have a disequilibrium between the supply and demand. And so any health reform, if it hurts the interest of the supply side, they will resist and they will fight, and they will fight tooth and nail to obstruct it, to not have it happen. Because Uwe, you know, famously said, every healthcare dollar equals someone's healthcare income. So when you try to hurt the economic interest of existing interests, or to dampen the prospect of their economic interests, like if you put cost control measures in, they will fight. And that is very hard to change. Unless, I would add this, unless there is some kind of national catastrophe like the Japanese Fukushima nuclear meltdown, okay, that we say, oh, we need to do something and something fast, and so let's go this way.
Is there an equivalent accident, an equivalent nuclear-type fear that would force change in America's healthcare system?
I would say not at the moment, luckily, and I hope it never happens. But I think you can say that there is some tremor in the ground. There's some what do you call it, mild degrees of earthquake, which is, I would say, which is really driven by a change that we have observed. And that is since Obama's CARES implementation in 2014, and the Republican efforts to repeal and replace it in 2016 through 2017, that people have, so people know that they're threatened that somebody's going to come take away their health care. And so they say, no, we want it. We want health care. So the popularity of Obamacare has increased. And this is the sort of the earth shaking a little bit.
Metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically, that's right. That's right.
I wanted to take a few minutes before you wrapped, May, to talk about your own life, your own work. You are a well-known healthcare scholar, researcher, speaker, even beyond your collaborations with Uwe. It makes me wish that we had a window into those dinner table conversations that you and Uwe must have had. I mean, was it always about healthcare? Was healthcare not allowed at the dinner table because you talk about it the rest of your time? I mean, is your home a sanctuary from talking about how to fix the American healthcare system?
A lot of it is that. Yeah, it could be from breakfast.
A lot of it is talking about healthcare.
Yeah. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and other times, because there's so much to talk about, right? What is happening? What is wrong and why, and how do you go about solving these issues? So there's a lot of that, because basically we both want healthcare for everyone, not just every American, but everyone anywhere in the world.
So you'd be having lunch and the price of the sandwich would be too high, and that would start a conversation about how stupid the prices are in healthcare too? I mean, is it just like a natural conversation that
That's
you would
right.
flow into?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. There are other things, like he'll say, oh, you know, I discovered this country song. He loves country music, right? I discovered this. Oh, it's lovely. He says, listen to the lyrics. So there's all kinds, you know. Or we can talk about, I don't know, foreign affairs, our defense policy. What are we doing? Why are we developing, for example, putting money in this military equipment called the Crusader? The Pentagon was spending billions developing that vehicle, which the generals were telling them, but that's not what we need for desert warfare because this vehicle is going to sink in the sand. But they were spending money. So we get exercised about things like that.
You have your own career, decades of work in the healthcare field. Uwe was a shining star, someone that people knew, whether it was the columns in the New York Times or testifying on Capitol Hill. How easy or hard was it to balance the fact that both of you worked in the same field?
There's nothing to it. I'm just so proud, so happy for him and for us and for our country and for other countries that what he says seems to be listened to and that what we do seem to have made an impact in different countries. I mean, we have no time to talk about what we try to do for China, where...
We can do that on our separate Chinese language podcast when we're done recording this one.
Oh, yeah. Because the reform we had suggested there, really, you're talking about impacting hundreds of millions lives.
Given just how large China is and its own healthcare system.
So I'm always supportive of him. And vice versa, he's always supportive of what I do, and we review and critique and make suggestions of each other's work. So it's been a very wonderful and rare partnership.
What do you wish listeners knew about Uwe that maybe they did not know?
I would like to say that Uwe of. The word is, he is just a thoroughly moral man, a good man. He cares about the lives of other people. He cares about the impact of policies on families, finances, what happens to you. You know, the government decides to do this. How does it impact you? He really, really cares about that. And he's not afraid to speak truth to anybody. You know, it could be anybody, from presidents to legislators to providers. You know, once he was in front of the business council at a huge meeting, the Fortune 500 CEOs were there and talking about healthcare costs rise. And he said, you know, talking about healthcare cost rise, who is responsible for that? You need not look further. Just go into the bathroom and look in the mirror.
You know, did they do that? Did they get up and self-assess?
I think, you know, many of them actually came up afterwards and thanked him for pointing it out, for saying it to them. And so he is someone who is courageous. He's never afraid to speak up about what he thinks is the right thing to do, is the wrong thing to do, or a stupid thing to do. Because you're hurting people, you're wasting our national resources. And then on the personal front, I can just go on. You know, I think, let me just say this. People like beautiful things, say gemstones, right? So I would compare Uwe to a gemstone, but he is one of the rarest of the gemstones, whose brilliance, whose beauty just does not diminish with time ever. He keeps shining, and he's always there. I would say that, you know, he's left us with a lot of guidance. He doesn't dictate. He'll just tell you what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad, and how you might do it in a cost-effective way.
And
he gives suggestions. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't dictate, never. He just gives you options.
And it's often with the hint of a joke behind it. I always admired how he could package something both devastating and effective within something that was on the surface kind of funny until you think about the implications of what he's saying.
Right, exactly. So I would think that our country, I would think that the world, in fact, I'm not shy to say that, is a better off place because Uwe was here.
Many of the lessons that he taught over his career I found summed up in this new book, Priced Out, and it was fun to read, fun to hear his voice in my head again, and it was lovely to sit down with you, May. Thank you for joining Pulse Check.
I'm very happy to be here speaking with you today, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Thank you. That's it for Pulse Check this week. My thanks to May Cheng for joining me in Washington, D.C., and James Schneider at Princeton University Press for helping set up this conversation, Micaela Rodriguez for producing the show. If you like Pulse Check, you can help us. Search for Politico Pulse Check on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. Leave us a rating or review. That helps new listeners discover the show. If you have tips or suggestions for upcoming episodes, you can find me. I'm at ddiamond@politico.com by email. I'm always looking forward to hearing from listeners. And you can find a new episode of Politico Pulse Check in your podcast player next week.